Gute Wahl. Gute Wahl. That's right. Okay, a gute Wahl. So we are in Cheles Havavis Shar Avodas Elokim, Perek Tes. We're starting the paragraph that starts, Umi Chochmas Habore Yis'ale. What page is it in the Leiv Tov? I'm sorry. What page do you have there? Page Resh Pei Zayin in the Leiv Tov. And page 332 in the English edition, Yasher Koyach. Okay. So we spent a lot of time defining the... We spent a lot of time defining... I think this chair... We spent a lot of time defining our existence in this world and the goals, the purposes that we're here for. And this time we're actually not going to recap. We've only done it 67 times. So now we're going to move on and start discussing the particulars of our existence here. So, as we discussed, man is the greatest being created by Hashem. Not when we're talking about the body, but when we're talking about the full picture of man, when we're talking about the neshama, the nishmas Yisrael, the tzelem elokim. This was Hashem's purpose in this massive entity called creation, of which our universe is a small part. And man is unique. This was Hashem created the whole Bria for Chesed, but he did it to different levels. And the neshama of the Jew was created to be the recipient with the greatest capacity to be able to get bound up with Hashem and to be able to receive, kiviyachol, the highest levels of what he has to offer, which really is himself, binding you up with himself. We saw that in order for it to reach that maximum level, you have to achieve in this world, time number 68, perfection of mind, perfection of character, and living a life of looking for the opportunities to perform for Hashem in every situation in life. And now we move on to discuss how Hashem set this up. After we discussed ourselves, but Hashem put us into the setting that accommodates that, that's conducive for that. It's the arena that we call Olam Hazeh. So, May Chokhmas HaBoreh Yis'al, Hashem in His great wisdom, Bara Lecha HaOlam Hazeh, created for you, for this purpose, Olam Hazeh, this world, Bechol Asher Boy, with everything in it, Mikoyfe, V'Tzoymeach, V'Chai, minerals, plant life. I'll say that mitukon van hoga nechayin. It's all set up very deliberately organized. Hakol mitukon litoy altech. It's all there for you. It's all there for your benefit. Meaning, we're meant to understand that all of existence around us, certainly all of Earth, but even what's beyond the Earth, is there to set up the system within which we can perform our function. Everything that's here is there for that purpose. Some things are more directly related to our purpose, the food you eat, right? And some things are more distantly there for our purpose. But it's important to realize that. Even the exotic birds in the tropical forests of South America are somehow contributing to our function. How exactly? Well, just in very many ways. But first of all, we can say in a couple of general ways. That first of all, there are the people who will study these birds and will be inspired. There are people who will study insects and will be inspired by seeing the complexity, the wisdom in these things. But it also goes beyond that. It also goes beyond that. Lamaisa, everything is contributing, everything in our existence, everything in the physical world is basically contributing to this system of the perfect balance of Earth, of Earth's functioning. That's why it's such a big deal when a species goes extinct. It's not just the value. There's a very practical problem in a species going extinct because it throws things off. It throws things off in terms of the equilibrium of the whole system, and the effects can often be felt very far beyond the actual location of that species, right? That species is part of the food chain. And also it might be contributing in some way, all kinds of different ways, to the atmosphere, to the environment, etc. And therefore, Lamaise, everything is working together to provide that livable place in which we operate. David HaMelech was confused by some phenomena. How do they contribute to Hashem's plan, right? David HaMelech asked about the mosquito. He asked about the spider. How do these things contribute to Hashem's plan? And he was shown different ways in which they do, but sometimes it can be surprising. It can be in a very isolated way. In David's case, the mosquito served to, well, the story, what happened there when he snuck into Shaul HaMelech's camp. We know that Shaul HaMelech was always was pursuing David, wanted to kill him. Big story. We're not going to get into the details now, but David HaMelech mamish bent over backwards to try to prove to Shaul that he's not out to get him, and to try to get Shaul off of his heels. So at one point, when Shaul was pursuing David with a whole camp, David snuck into the camp in the middle of the night. What he wanted to do was he wanted to get right up to Shaul and steal his sword and his personal flask of water in order to show him afterwards, look how close I got to you. I could have killed you easily. I had the right to, according to Allah, because you're pursuing me, you want to kill me. And then what happened? He got the sword and the flask, and as he was moving away from Shaul, right next to Shaul was Shaul's very, very powerful general, Avner. Avner was like a very, very strong man. And Avner shifted in his sleep and trapped David between his legs. And his legs were iron. Right? There was no getting out. And David wasn't going to try, to maneuver it. He didn't want to wake him up. David was in mortal danger now. And then what happened? A mosquito came along, a little insect came along and stung Avner. And Avner's leg jumped and David was able to get out. He escaped. This was Hashem's answer to David as to why the mosquito is there. In other words, it might be something you don't understand its purpose, but Hashem is envisioning there will be situations where I will need to use, so to speak, not need, but where I will use that animal's services for specific things. Meaning it might not necessarily be contributing to the system in an ongoing way, but Hashem might say, one minute, there will be a few incidents in history where this animal will perform a function. But whatever the case is, this we're being told, that the all of existence and the universe around us is revolving around us and our function. It's there for us and our function. And therefore, we come on to another important point. This is a point that the Messiah Yesharim brings out. That by performing our function, we are giving the world its value. Hashem says, I created such a beautiful world. See, also Sharon says, Hashem took Adam HaRishon and took him on a tour of Gan Eden, showed him all the beautiful things that he created, and he said, I created this for you. Don't ruin my world. And see, also Sharon explains that what that means is all these wonderful things were created for man's function. So if we do our function right, we're giving the world its value. We're giving the world its meaning. If we don't, chas v'shalom, then such a beautiful, vast world is basically being wasted. So that's important to appreciate that all of existence is revolving around us and our function. Now, he goes on and says, "Ubachaloch misgulas yesoidoi." So now Hashem took the choicest of the elements of this physical world and built for you, besides the world that's operating around you, he built for you a heichal mituka, a perfect heichal. We'll call that a headquarters. Heichal really means a mansion. But if you want to put it into practical contemporary terms, we'll talk about a beautiful office. He gave you an office which is equipped with all the equipment you need to do your job. What's that office? It's your body. That's what your body is. The Kodesh HaOlam is relating to your body as an office within which you operate. So you want to now look at your body in a new way. First of all, as we keep stressing, you look in the mirror, you see your body, you're not really seeing you. You are an neshama that transcends the body infinitely, right? That we discussed plenty. That shouldn't be news by now. But we had been discussing the body as a certain impediment to the neshama, which is what gives us our meaning in life, right? It's there to slow the neshama down, to dim the clarity of the neshama in order to enable us to connect on our own. Fine. But now we're giving another angle on the body, and that is the body is the office that's given to the neshama to do its job in this world. We're put into this world. Look at your body as a means. It's an office very well equipped with everything we need to do our job. This is now in that body, in that office, he opened up five gateways out to the world. And he appointed for each of the gateways a gatekeeper. What do we mean by that? What we mean is that, again, the body is the office that you're functioning in. But you're going to need to order supplies. You have an office, you're doing business, trading around the world from within that office. You're going to need to order supplies, right? You have to have deliveries being made to the office. The office is not completely self-sufficient. You have to have deliveries being made to the office in order to continue the business. You might have to have maintenance workers come to fix things in the office. So Hashem says the office is your immediate arena within which you're doing your job, but there's a whole world around you that you might need to dip into to get things out of it in order to do your job properly. So he gives you five ways of accessing the world in order to get what you need from the world to do your job. This is just so important to really internalize that it's not that there's a whole world out there with all kinds of different things going on. And in that world, we also have the Jewish people functioning. We also have us doing our function. The whole world is about that. That's the story of the world. And we're meant to relate to the world, once again, as a means. The body is a means of our doing our job. And the world around us is a means of doing our job. And that's all it is. It shouldn't be anything more than that. And therefore, look at the way he puts it. He says we have five gateways out to the world with five gatekeepers. What are the gateways? Hasha'arim him kleachushim. The gateways are our senses, or the organs of our senses. What's that? Ha'inayim, va'aznayim, va'af, va'aloshim, va'yodayim. The eyes, we have the ears, we have the nose, we have the tongue, and we have the hands, right? These are the five senses: sight, hearing, smell, taste, and feeling. V'asharim him achushim achamim. And the gatekeepers are the five senses. We have the organs of the five senses, and then we have the five senses, hamishtamshim bahem, that we use. V'hem. Chush har'us, v'chush ha'shema, v'areach, v'atam, v'amishush. The sense of sight, hearing, smell, taste, and feeling. Through these, you will be able to access anything you need for your benefit from this world. So, let's note something here. There's an underlying point that's being made here. It's all revolving around your function, right? And the whole world is there. There's a major world out there for you to reach out to and draw on as you need for your function. But look at the way he's putting it. Sight, hearing, smell, taste, and feeling are all there. They're exactly that. They are ways of accessing what you need for your function. In other words, it's not that you live in a world and that's the reality around you. Your reality is the reality of the neshama. The world is a certain surrounding entity that you're meant to access as needed for your function. That's still a little abstract, but I'm getting to the practical point that I want to get to is this. You exist in a world, but don't really be a part of that world. Use the world according to your discretion. I'll just give one example. And this is what I think is a fundamental example of the point that he's making here. We'll probably end up with more examples. But let's take, for example, hearing. We think of our senses as, you know, we're a part of what's going on around us. We hear, we see, these are automatic things. We smell. Okay, tasting is something that you have to do more actively. But hearing, seeing, smelling, these are things that it's just the reality around us and we see what's going on. We see what's going on. But he's actually saying that it shouldn't necessarily be that way. Seeing, hearing, smelling is a little bit less, right? It's not a major part of what we are actively doing. But let's say seeing and hearing are things that should be decisions. Now we're going to be discussing very high madrigas here. Well, let's introduce ourselves to the concept. Just one example that really brings out the point. We're talking about a proper, concrete mitzvah from the Torah. There's an Isser in the Torah, an Isser d'oraisa of Shmias Lashon Hora. Not allowed to hear Lashon Hora. We have to appreciate the lesson that this is conveying to us. If I'll call it the Western way of thinking is, you know, the right to know, right? The right to have the information, the right to hear. We have a concept of the right not to know. We don't necessarily consider that, you know, I know everything that's going on around me and then I make my decisions as to what I want to do with that information. No, you should decide what you want to expose yourself to and what not. Hearing things, hearing talk, right? It's not okay. I heard. That's it. It happened. I'm passive. I heard this. And now I have to process it. I believe it. I don't believe it. I'm going to act on it. I'm not going to act on it. Here the Torah is telling us, no. You should be able to decide what are the things I want to be hearing and what are the things I don't want to be hearing. Things that are not going to benefit my ruchnias, things that are not going to benefit my function, I don't want to hear in the first place. Now that goes against a certain natural way of thinking that I'll hear it, I'll process it, I'll decide. The Torah is saying no. The Torah is saying no. Don't think of it in those terms. Before I hear something, I want to know, is this going to benefit my ruchnius or not? If not, I don't want to hear it in the first place. And this is the iser of shmiya lashon hara, the iser of hearing lashon hara. We're not talking about talking lashon hara. Talking lashon hara, we understand that's something active, right? But hearing lashon hara, be able to say no. My ruchnius will do better. Now again, since we're talking here about an iser d'oraisa, we don't really have to come on to explaining why it's so important. But let's do that in order to really grasp the concept. I will be a more quality person. I will be a higher level person if I'm relating to the people around me positively, if I am thinking highly of them. It will make me a higher functioning person. It will put me in a better place with Hashem because Hashem appreciates those who think highly of his children. And therefore, no, I don't want to hear something that will cause me to view a child of Hashem's negatively. I don't want to hear it. Now, a person might say, no, so I'll hear it, and then I'll decide not to relate to it. No, part of the business is understanding that we are vulnerable as human beings. This is another fundamental point in growth. Contrary to what might be a certain intuitive way of thinking, that you should have the moral or intellectual maturity to be able to hear anything and then decide how you want to process it. To expose myself to anything and then decide how I want to process it. Give an example. We're getting a little bit beyond the specific example we're giving, but it's the same idea. The Isser of Yichud. Right? There's an Isser of Yichud. fundamental halacha in Yiddishkeit is that a man and a woman, strange man and woman, do not seclude themselves together. Now you might say, one minute, isn't that like a certain, like, what does Hashem think of his people? Is that Chazal's opinion of the Jewish people? We should be mature enough, we should be strong enough to be able to, yes, seclude ourselves and not run into problems. So you know what? The Torah is giving you a very powerful insight. And if you look around at the world around you, you see that that is the reality. The Torah is giving you a very powerful insight into human nature. And that is that, you know where the moral greatness of the Jewish people is going to come? It's not going to come from a sense of we are above these things. It's going to come from a sense of I recognize my vulnerability. And therefore, you know how I'm going to keep myself at a high level? It's by recognizing my vulnerability and by taking measures to safeguard myself. No, I am not just going to expose myself to anything and then rely on my own moral maturity, rely on my own sense of values, etc., to stay in a pure place. No. I'm going to recognize that I'm vulnerable. I'm going to recognize that I'm human. And adrab, on the contrary, that's where the greatness of the Jewish people lie. The Rambam talks about Amiroim, who made statements that would seem very embarrassing about how they told their Talmidim, don't leave me alone with this woman because I don't know what I'll do, right? And the Rambam says, why did they make these statements? The reason they were making these statements was to convey to their Talmidim, don't be embarrassed to acknowledge your human weakness. On the contrary, that's where our greatness lies. Your greatness doesn't lie in the feeling that I'm above these things. If a person really thinks of himself that way, he might learn the hard way that he's not. But the greatness lies in the fact that no, on the contrary, you know what? I'm human. I'm very aware of that. And as a human being, I want to be able to keep myself pure. And therefore, I take the steps needed to keep myself pure. So here we're coming back to the understanding that, how did we get there? We got here from the Isser of Shmias Lashon Hara. Something that is going to taint the way I relate to my fellow Jew, I don't want to hear it in the first place. I want to maintain a pure perspective, an elevated perspective of the Jews around me. I want to add another point. This is a bit of a tangent, but it's a worthwhile tangent. I want to add another point. You know how much that enhances the quality of our life? Being part of a society where Lashon Hara is observed strongly, not only Sipur Lashon Hara, but also Shmias Lashon Hara, we all make mistakes. We all make some bad blunders. It can be very embarrassing. And if there's an attitude of everybody has the right to know, everybody has the right to hear, etc., a person's life can really be ruined by something, a momentary slip, and everybody's talking about it, and that's that. You never regain your standing. What a quality of life it is to be part of a society where, no, the people who know about it are not going to say a word. And if one of them does, if we're talking in a really conscientious society, the other people are going to say, we don't want to hear. Ah, stop. We don't want to hear. That's what Gemara says, right? That's why the fingers are made like this, right? They fit perfect fit right into your ears. I actually saw that one time in Malinowitz coming out of this. Have you seen him do that? So I guess I'm not the only one. This was a common phenomenon. He was coming out of this. There was a guest here, a guest for Yom Tov, schmoozing with him. And all of a sudden, he got into some sort of, you're talking about some common acquaintance. And, there's a certain sophisticated feeling about, oh, if you would know what I know, right? It's like a certain feeling of superiority if you have the inside information on people, right? So this person started with something like, if you would know what I know about this person. And Sura Ben Munoz went like this. Ah! The person got very offended, right? But, so he took his hands out of his ears again, starting to talk to him. The person got back onto it again, up like that. But this is the point that he's making here. Don't say, I'm in a world, I'm seeing things, I'm hearing things, and then I'll deal with it. Then I'll make my decisions. You decide what you want to see, you decide what you want to hear. Now, to a certain extent, you're not going to be able to control it. But let's at least understand the concept. Don't actively be seeing and hearing everything around you, right? You often see that in the pasuk, right, where it's expressed about Avraham Avinu, etc. Vayisa eino vayar. He lifted his eyes and he saw, and he decided he wanted to see. We don't want to be, again, with our eyes, we don't want to be exposing ourselves to things that are going to go against our sensitivities, the sensitivities that we want to maintain. We have to realize that seeing things that will work against our sensitivities will wear down our sensitivities. We want to remain in a pure place where our sensitivities are at their finest. I'll tell one story. I probably told this tens of times. Tell it again. I can't keep track of where I said it and when. You'll like this. I have a cousin in the States, Tzadik, who he lives in an enclave, you know, in a yeshiva community. He's been there for years and doesn't step out of there much. And one time he was called for jury duty. He was summoned for jury duty. And, okay, comes, couldn't get out of it. It was a murder case. It was a murder case with where the imamish had like very gory pictures of the scene of the crime. I don't know exactly what they had there, but it was like really gory, very graphic. And in the first day that he was sitting in the court session, he's seeing these things, and he just like, you know, he felt like he's going to be traumatized for the rest of his life, and he couldn't sleep that night. He came to the judge and he said, I just can't do this. I can't handle this. And the judge said, what can't you handle? He said, the sights and the descriptions and the hearing. It's just, you know, I guess these judges are used to everybody comes from some angle to try to get out of it, right? So he said, come on, you see this on television all the time. So my cousin said, I don't own a television. So he said, you don't what? I don't own a television. So like, did a double take. But as he was convinced that was actually the truth of the matter, he said, this is mamish, like the first time in his life that he's being exposed to such sights. So he let him off the hook. He think he wrote on the thing, he wrote the exempted due to excessive innocence. That was what he wrote on the slip. But you know what? This is what we're talking about. This is what we're talking about. Now, this has a practical side and it has a more principled side to it. The principled side to it is that if Hashem is opposed to violence, except in the very specific circumstances where it needs to be done, and that's a whole discussion in itself, and Hashem, all the Torah values will have situations where Hashem requires you to even work against those. But if it's an issur d'oraisa to strike a Jew, I'm not talking about creating gory pictures. I'm talking about hitting a Jew. If it's an issur d'oraisa to hit a Jew, right? Then it's not just that Hashem doesn't want you to do it. Hashem wants you to be repulsed by it. And Hashem wants your sensitivities to be such that it's unthinkable. It's something that would jar me. And therefore, I don't want to see those things, even if I am not going to be doing it. Don't go to watch a good boxing match just to enjoy the scene. I would never do that. But again, we want to see things that will be beneficial for our ruchnizdikas sensitivities. It goes further than that too. It also has practical aspects to it. When you see these things, they're part of your frame of reference. They're not unthinkable. If they happen, it's not the end of the world. We want to be in a place where if, Khalila, my kid would do something, punch someone in the face or something like that, I will be floored. I don't want to be in a place where, okay, it happens all the time. This is what goes on. We want to be in a place where we would be shocked by things that go against our sensitivities. We still have to know how to respond. But that's what Rabbi Avigdor Miller said. For example, it says, in the Torah, it says, an eye for an eye, right? A tooth for a tooth, etc. A hand for a hand, a leg for a leg. Simply understand, you understand that to mean somebody chopped off somebody's arm, you chop off his arm. Everybody knows that that's not the case, right? That's one of the first things we learn about Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah says an eye for an eye. What does it mean? It means that you make monetary compensation. So it's such a dramatic pasuk, right? It's a dramatic pasuk. It has a dramatic sound to it. Eye for an eye. It's not literal. Never meant to be done. So why does the Torah express it that way? Why does the Torah express it that way? So Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, this is a principle that explains many of the different such dinim in the Torah, such expressions in the Torah. Chazon Ish also used this principle. So the Torah is not just coming to teach you what to do in Beis Din. The Torah is coming to teach you how you should feel about it. You should be horrified. If somebody broke somebody else's leg, your feeling should be that person deserves to have his leg broken. Just what? The Torah is compassionate and says, no. It shouldn't be something understandable. Yeah, if somebody gets you mad enough, you break his leg. No. Violence of this nature is something that should be so shocking to you that your feeling should be this person deserves to have the same done to him. But again, this is about preserving sensitivities. So therefore, we come back and we say, understand that sight, hearing, etc., are gateways that you use to access things that are going to be beneficial for your Yiddishkeit. Now, practically speaking, if you're going to walk through the street with your eyes closed, you're going to trip and smash your nose. And then you'll get your sense of smell under absolute control. But, so yeah, we're going to be living in a world where we'll be seeing and hearing things. But let's understand that we want to have the concept of deciding. What do I want to be? What sights do I want to be exposing myself to? What sounds? What information do I want to be exposing myself to? So that's something to be gained out of this perspective, the way he's putting it, of that we relate to the senses not as just experiencing the reality of the world automatically, no, but as gateways that you decide, what do I want to dip into the world around me for to access? Okay. We move on. Here I'm going to skip a bit. I'm skipping a bit down to, I'm sorry, just give me a moment. Okay. He goes through all the various organs and functions of the body, showing how these are all a part of that whole system, that office that he set up for you in order to facilitate your function. And then he says, v'achar kach, you see a paragraph that starts v'achar kach. I'm not sure if it's in the middle of the paragraph, in the beginning of the paragraph. V'achar kach, chibrich ala hechel hazeh chibur mituka. So now, you have this body, this office that Hashem set up, okay? And then he took you. Again, you're not that office. That office is not you. He took you, remembering who you are. He took you, and he connected you to that office, chibur mituka, with a profound connection. Ukshoich elav kesher misudar. He bound you to it in an organized way, with his great ability and wisdom. I'm going to note, you should realize that the shidduch between the neshama and the body that he's talking about, he already stresses how this is done with Hashem's great wisdom and ability. If we would really understand the nature of the neshama, we should understand that this is a very big deal. In fact, if you look in the Ramah, we say at the end of Asher Yotzeh, Refein basar umaflila asois. He heals all flesh, and he does wonders. So Ramah says, what's mafila asois? What are the wonders that we're referring to? The wonders that we're referring to is the fact that Hashem connected a neshama with a body. Because really, the neshama and the body are not compatible. They're a very uncanny shidduch. The neshama, Zohar Sheshem goes on about this, the neshama does not like the idea of being locked into a body. Like we said before, the neshama is something that has the greatest vision, the greatest clarity, the greatest sense of connection with Hashem. All of a sudden, you stick it into a body. First of all, it's so dulled, right? It's awareness, it's clarity, it's awareness of Hashem is taken down to such a great degree. And also the vulnerability of all things. The neshama is at the mercy of a body. The neshama doesn't want to be there. And therefore, what we want to do in order to try to appease the neshama is take the body and make, let the body assure the neshama, don't worry, I'm only going to be here trying to help you and trying to further your cause. I'm not going to take the scene over. I'm not going to take over here. But Lamaisa, this is what's being expressed, Mafila Asois, that it's one of Hashem's wonders that he connected a neshama to a body. But that's what he did. He did it, as we discussed the other week, because he wanted to grant the neshama the ability to get to the highest madrega it can by operating through the body, by working through the opaqueness of the body, by working through the thick-headedness of the body, if we'll call it that, in order to dig through that, to connect to Hashem through all that, and then to get to that highest level that Hashem really meant for it. So now, so he connected you with that office, in order for you to achieve those three functions that we mentioned above. Right? Remember those three functions? Perfection of mind, perfection of character, and utilizing free choice to always utilize the opportunities that Hashem is giving you. And then he provided you with two counselors who are going to be guiding you, advising you. And each of those counselors comes along with a secretary. There's a secretary for each of those guides. And then he provided you with other servants that are going to be helping you out with your needs in this world. So the two guides, the two counselors, and their two secretaries we'll be discussing next week, Bezat Hashem. But I just want to take note of, again, the Avadim and the Meshosim that he's talking about. Like Hashem was saying, how he put these servants at your disposal. So just think about for a minute. If we'll just put this into very, very physical terms. Just appreciating, let's say, for example, the white blood cells. White blood cells are armies of live beings, countless live beings. You think about it, each of them is mamish, a living being with its own life, its own death. And what's it there for? It's the defense of your body. This is the army of defense of your body. They patrol, right? They're busy patrolling all the areas of your body, in the blood, looking out for any infiltrations, right? And then they're meiser nefesh for you. And many, many living beings are giving up their lives to fight off invaders. If a germ comes in, they mobilize the forces, they send out an alarm, the white blood cells, all these living beings come rushing to the scene, they start fighting the invaders in order to protect you. Think of it in these terms in order to appreciate what we quite mean by that Hashem mamish created armies of human beings for that one person called you. This is all, why does it have to operate this way? Why couldn't it just be simpler? Hashem wants you to have a sense of quite what the significance of your function is. Okay, again, we'll take a moment for questions if there are. And we'll end for this week.
I have a question. How does a goy fit into that? Good question.
Okay. Sorry, just a moment.
What was the